Austin's William Harry's Graham on the Austin Music Experience, KUTX. The son of John D. Graham, David Frick, and I were talking about just the beauty of the fact that we're here seeing the kids of Lily Hyatt, Lucas Nelson, John D. Graham's son, William Harry's Graham. The song Light It Up, John D. Graham and the Lo Jinx Orchestra tonight at the Continental Club. That's a South By wrap-up show.
Definitely, definitely.
And that's what we've got going here, but we've got something really special, David.
This is very hip.
When I looked at the calendar and I saw that we were doing our show as we usually do on Sunday, and I saw it was March 18th, I thought, hey, that's Bobby Whitlock's birthday. In fact, his 70th birthday.
So we'll do a present for us.
Yeah, we'll ask Bobby if he'll come and let us play his music. And he said yes. So we're going to hear some music from Delaney and Bonnie and Derek and the Dominoes and George Harrison's All Things Must Pass and a couple of surprises. And we're going to start that in about 30 seconds.
Support comes from UT's Macomb School of Business's Weekend Executive MBA for current and aspiring executives. Meeting in Austin on alternating weekends. Info session March 21st. Registration at TexasExecutiveMBA.info.
Support comes from the At Last Llano Art Studio Tour, featuring 20 area artists showcasing diverse mediums in their creative workspaces, Saturday the 31st in historic Llano. Gallery and self-guided maps at llanofineartsguild.com.
So, Bobby Whitlock's joining us for this hour, and I'm going to play you a Sam and Dave song, and maybe you're going, I don't get the connection. But we'll tell you the connection in a moment. Just listen for the hand claps here, and we'll pick it back up on the other side with Bobby Whitlock.
I want everybody to get up off your seat and get your arms together and your hands together and give me some of that old soul clapping. You didn't have to love me like you did, but you did, but you did. And I thank you. You didn't have to squeeze me like you did, but you did, but you did. And I thank you. If you took your
the KUTX South by Southwest wrap-up show. I'm Jody Denberg, here with journalist and radio host David Frick. And David, this is the sixth year we've done this program and on KUTX, and we've had some great guests over the years.
Robin Hitchcock.
Sean Lennon. B.P. Fallon.
Alejandro Escovedo.
But today, we have, on his 70th birthday, our friend Bobby Whitlock. Good morning and happy birthday.
Good yes. morning. Glad to be here. Thank
happy
you.
Birthday to you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Well, I bet people are going, okay, so Bobby Whitlock's the guest. Why are you starting with a Sam and Dave song? And I've read Bobby's book, so I knew that that's, and correct me, but that's the first time you were ever recorded and released on
that
song?
Yeah, yeah. And that was Isaac Hayes and David Porter doing hand claps with me. They were starting, they said, come on over here and join in, man. And I went, wow. I get to clap on this thing, man, and it's great because they had the song was written in one room. I think Homer Banks, Betty Crutcher wrote it in one room. Booker T had just gotten his new clavinet, so he was breaking that thing in. That's when they just made those. So he just got the new clavinet like the day before, and they recorded "I Thank You" and invited me to do hand claps on it. Yeah, so that's my first time.
Now, you were the first, I want to be politically correct, white artist to have a record deal with Stax Records, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was the first white artist signed to their hip label. And they were trying to get in on that British invasion with Herman and the Hermits and Freddie and the Dreamers and those kind of people like that. I mean, they recorded a few things on me, and it was so bad that I really had to flee, you know.
Had to leave town? Was that it?
I actually had to leave town and go be with Delaney and Bonnie and friends and start that band with Delaney and Bonnie. But it was so bad. I mean, we were using Booker T and the MGs and the Memphis Horns and trying to do pop music, and it sounded like bubblegum stuff. You know, I've been trying to hide those songs forever. You know, written by Leon Russell. Now,
well, sorry I brought it up, but it is a really
no,
great...
actually, I want to hear it.
No, man. Y'all have to hear that in the back.
Hey, listen, I have actually, that label, HIP, they recorded the band Black Oak Arkansas when they were called the Nobody Else.
I remember them. Jimmy
and
Dandy?
And let me tell you, that record's not very good either. And
no,
I bought it anyway.
They had a strange idea on what pop music was about, you know, and they were trying to recreate, like I said, Freddie and the Dreamers and the Hermits at Stax Records. Man, those guys are R&B players.
That's,
you know,
where the acid goes wrong. That's like, well, not, it wasn't working.
And it is amazing that your first ever recorded appearance that's released is a classic that's being listened to 50 plus years later. The song we just heard by Sam and Dave, "I Thank You." And a great way to start out our celebration of Bobby Whitlock's 70th birthday this morning. Now, you mentioned that you left Memphis and joined up with Delaney and Bonnie. All of this, I will tell everyone, is in Bobby's book, and you can read it there, and you should. But this is a different way of hearing the stories in a conversational way. Please tell me about how you left Memphis and wound up with Delaney and Bonnie.
They were the Stax was going to put the machine behind them. It was going to be Bonnie and Delaney. All right, and their first record really was the Stax record, all right, but it became the second one because Delaney signed another deal while he still had an original deal. Stax just chilled out and let Elektra do all the footwork, and they just released the Delaney Bonnie record. But Delaney and Bonnie were brought to Memphis by Duck Dunn and Don Nix, who were big fans of mine, and I just come off the road, and this was right after Dr. King was assassinated. And we were playing a little club on Southern and Highland. It was called the Cabaret Club. And it was a brick building that had a train track running by it. And it was like a shotgun room. And they were sitting out there. It was on a Wednesday night. And everybody knew they were coming. Anytime anybody of note was coming to town, everybody knew about it before they got there. Like Ahmed Erdogan, or if anybody was coming to town to Stax a little, everybody knew about it. And I was on the know for everything because I was everywhere. And I was at Stax, at High, at America. And everybody was doing what they were doing, I was there soaking it all in, you know. But they brought Delaney and Bonnie, and they were out there listening to me and my band, and we were doing "Expressway to Your Heart," you know, "Good Loving," you know, and "Midnight Hour," all the Stax Volt catalog I did, you know, and then we did "Sunny," "Thank You for That." I mean, all the really cool stuff. And they listened to my set, and I went out there to say hello, and I liked what they were doing. And they said, "We're going to put a band together. You want to go to California?" And this is a Wednesday night, and put a band together with us. And it was just Delaney and Bonnie. I said, "Sure." and I was gone Saturday. And I said, I accepted right in front of Duck and Don, who were my producers at the time. Man, I was glad to go, boy. I was hot. So I went down to Lansky Brothers and bought me a Nehru jacket with a little collar that went up like that and a little tie with a slide on it, you know. Me and my little pudgy self coming bouncing, rolling off the plane there in Hollywood. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And made some classic records with Delaney and Bonnie.
Yeah, we did great stuff.
And I threw it to you to choose a song from Delaney and Bonnie and your days with them, and you chose Coming Home.
Yeah, when we were on the road in a bus, Delaney had a thing that was a set of headset like these, but he plugged into his guitar, and you could hear the guitar in the headset, but you couldn't, not out here. And he was two seats up and one to the left on front of the bus writing this song. I could hear him, been out on the road about 6 months too long. And I could just hear him singing this thing. And then he got finished writing the song. As we're rolling down the road, he said, here, Bob, put this on. Let me play you this. And so he just turned one of the ears up. So I had one ear up and one ear down, you know. And he started playing and singing, Coming Home to me. I witnessed it go down. I witnessed that and Superstar being written. I was pretty amazing stuff.
Delaney and Bonnie, Coming Home from the album D&B Together. Our guest this morning on our KUTX South by wrap-up show is the great Bobby Whitlock, who played with Delaney and Bonnie and George Harrison and Derek and the Dominoes and Coco Carmel and so many others. And this is Jody Denberg with David Frick and Bobby Whitlock. And David, that Delaney and Bonnie stuff sounds like it could have been recorded yesterday.
And that's Eric Clapton on guitar. So Eric was in that orbit and clearly rejuvenated as an artist himself when he started, you know, he was coming out of Cream, he was coming out of so much, you know, other stuff, you know, not really certain what he wanted to be. You know, he was a superstar, but being a superstar doesn't really tell you the path that you need to be as a creative musician. And I think that, and I'm hoping Bobby can explain this, is, you know, how, you know, someone like Eric, who clearly had enormous stature, what was he learning from, you know, from playing with you and Delaney and Bonnie, and what was he getting out of that that you could see?
Well, you know, as you were saying, it just dawned on me. I said, well, Eric hadn't even found the guitar he wanted. You know, he didn't even start playing a Stratocaster until, you know, he got with Derek and the Dominoes.
Because he was coming out of, like, the Les Paul and all the other stuff.
He would go on the road. And when we went on the road with the Dominoes, it was just one Stratocaster. He brought Brownie and Les Paul. That was it. And he carried the guitar. With Delaney and Bonnie, it was wasn't so much how to sing, because Eric could already sing. But from Eric wanted to sing from that place where Delaney was singing from, you know. And it,
he sort of wanted to get to know the South in a way that was more profound than just covering Robert Johnson.
Yeah. He wanted that to be real for him, you know. Diving into the lifestyle he chose to do, that was planned out. That wasn't an accident that he started drinking and drugging. He planned all that out. He talked to me about it, because all of his, the ones that he loved, his peers that he loved, they were all drunks and junkies, you know? And he was this pampered guy, you know, from England, yeah. From Ripley, you know? So he didn't know what the blues was about, and that was how he could figure he could get himself down there enough to play the blues.
Well, what about George Harrison, who also joined that tour in December of 69
He needed
England.
A break. You know, he needed a good,
a break from the Beatles.
He needed a good shot of rock and roll, R&R, you know. And we were the only rock and roll, gospel, rhythm and blues that there was. White act out there on the road, man. We had Billy Preston playing piano with us.
Dave Mason was on the tour.
Yeah, Dave Mason was with us. At one, when we did the live tour, we had Jim Gordon on drums, Carl Radle, Delaney on guitar, Bonnie and me singing. I was playing organ, Billy Preston on piano, Bobby Keys and Jim Price on the horns, and then we had Eric Clapton, George Harrison, and Dave Mason as our other three guitar players. That band moved fixed stages. It was amazing. And I still marvel at that I was a part of all that whole, an integral part. It's an important role I played in all these things that I was that I did. But I don't look, I never look back on it, because I've never looked back until I've reached this great place in my life where I can look back. I've got something to look back at and listen to. I never listened to all of my old records or anything. I'm just now starting to go back and go through them.
Man. Well, when you listen to something from, say, All Things Must Pass now, what do you recall of that transition? Because to go from something like Delaney and Bonnie, which is very Southern, very raucous, that, you know, it's the kind of church that is like the church is on fire. Mm-hmm. And you go to All Things Must Pass, George is much, almost, I don't want to say quieter, man, but much more spiritual. And really looking at things from a, you know, that Indian perspective, yeah. Of, you know, trying to find an inner peace, whereas, you know, Delaney and Bonnie was like, let's burn the place down.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Television's out the window.
George Harrison wasn't throwing televisions out the window.
I'll tell you what, when we did pick him up, we picked him up at his house in Esher, and we were all in a bus. Well, I'm telling you, they were rocking and rolling, and just, you just got to imagine, as soon as... They became superstars as soon as the wheels touched down in Heathrow, you know. But when we picked up George, he needed a break from the Beatles and all of that breakup that they were going through and all that turmoil. We picked him up, and when he walked on the bus, he carried an
aura,
peace around everywhere he went. And suddenly, man, those egos were just, you could hear the rug being ripped out from under Delaney and Bonnie's feet, you know, and the whole thing suddenly took shape, you know, it really did. I mean, everybody was really paying attention, really focused, man, because we had a Beatle on the bus and in the band, you know. But with George, as I said, his music was like a soft rock and roll. And so when he asked Eric and me to put the band together, he called one day after an afternoon out at Hurtwood, asked Eric and I to put a band together to be the core band for the album. I was thinking about, because he had played me songs and stuff. I spent some time out there at Friar Park with him. And he played me all the songs before we recorded them. And I thought it was acoustic rock, you know. And so I chose to play a pump organ. Nobody knew how to play it, you know, a pump organ. I was the only, really, the only, at one point, the only rock and roll, rhythm and blues and gospel that there was, influence that there was in the whole country of Great Britain was me standing in wherever I was. There wasn't any, everybody else had gone back to America. I was over there by myself, you know.
But it's interesting because by playing the pump organ, that was an instrument that actually suited the way Phil Spector then built that whole chapel of sound around those songs.
But some of that, there's some of it, where's Try Some, Buy Some, which came out on the Live in a Material World. There's a melody line that goes, and he's got a huge chorus of mandolins playing that. Well, that was really just, that's just the organ moving, organ movement through there. So it was free reign of what to do and what to play. First time I ever played piano that was recorded that I knew about was Beware of Darkness. And the very first thing was Johnny's birthday, because I was an organ player, and organ and piano, two different instruments all together.
Very much
you
so,
know,
yeah.
It's different. It's like violin and banjo, you know. But I'm sorry, I did runaway train here with my
your train
my
makes
thing.
All the stops.
But
no,
George,
that's cool.
George needed what we were doing.
Yeah,
we needed George as much as he needed us, you know. And Eric needed that all this roots stuff. He needed some kind of foundation to come from.
And it also brought the speed down and the intensity of that tour that you did, the English tour that's on tour with Eric Clapton, that live album.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you turn around to All Things Must Pass, and it is more interior looking. And I think that takes American gospel, blues, and soul and brings it into a very personal place that you can share, that you were able to share with Eric and George.
And on the album All Things Must Pass, the individual credits are not delineated for every song, but Bobby has, over the last few years, given us who plays exactly what on what songs. As you mentioned, Bobby, George got you and Eric to put this band together for All Things Must Pass. I want to play a song called Let It Down. What's your contribution on this song?
Playing B3 on it and singing background. Eric and I are doing the only backgrounds on this particular one. But I'm playing a B3. When we first did the song, it was just this beautiful acoustic song. And I said, man, you got to kick this one down somewhere, man. And so when we get to the chorus, why don't we just kick it down, you know, rather than all that kind of soft, let it down. No, let's kick it down. That's what we did.
KUTX 98.9. It's our annual South by Southwest wrap-up show. Jody Denberg here with journalist and radio host David Frick. And every year we have a special guest who joins us. And today it's especially special because it's the legendary Bobby Whitlock on his 70th birthday. And we heard songs that Bobby was involved with already from Sam and Dave. And then we heard Delaney and Bonnie, and there was an album that Bobby was so core to. I'm speaking about you like you're not sitting next to me. George Harrison's All Things Must Pass and Let It Down. And
some serious inner peace there.
And again, Bobby, can you tell me who was playing on that particular song?
Alan White was playing drums. He played drums on the first six songs on the All Things Must Pass record. Carl and Jim hadn't arrived on the scene just yet. But it was Alan White, Klaus Voormann on bass, me on Hammond, Billy Preston on piano, George playing the main guitar, and then Eric singing background. Eric didn't play on everything that was on there. I didn't play on every song. I didn't play on the Pete Drake things, but I was at the session because I wanted to make sure I was at every session for this record. But that's probably the only two things that I didn't really play on, you know. Apple Scruffs I didn't play on.
And you mentioned Carl and Jim weren't there yet. That would be Carl Radel, the bassist, and Jim Gordon, the drummer,
right,
who along with Bobby and Eric Clapton became Derek and the Dominoes. So, David, Bobby, Derek and the Dominoes grows out of All Things Must Pass? But,
well, from what I understand, that first single, Tell the Truth, the fast version,
yeah,
was actually done almost as an adjunct to the All Things Must Pass sessions because it was produced by Phil Spector.
Yeah, we did two songs. We did Roll It Over,
right,
and Tell the Truth, but that was part of our deal. Because I remember Eric being on the phone with George. We were sitting at Eric's house in the dining room area, and the phone rang, and Eric got up and walked over there and answered it. That's only the second time I've ever known him to talk on the phone. And the first time was when I called him and asked him about coming over for a visit, you know. And but the phone rang. Eric gets up and walks over and answers. He's going, yeah, yeah, yeah. That sounds great. I'll ask Bobby. Let me talk to him about it. I'm sure we can do it, you know. And he come around and hung the phone up, turned around and said, well, George wants us to put a band together for the core, be the core band on his record. I said, George who? He went, Harrison. I went, oh, wow, excellent. And so he said, why don't you make the calls? And you call Jim and Carl. I said, all right. And so I called Jim Keltner, who was slated to be the drummer, all right? And he was busy doing a Gabor Szabo record, so he couldn't come for like a month. You know, well, Jim Gordon heard that this was going down. He stormed over, you know, and Carl was tied up with Leon Russell. And so when Carl finally did make it, you know, that we were on into the session because Klaus and Alan and myself were, and then Eric and some of it were the band. But then when Carl and Jim showed up, it was all happening. You
but
know?
Were you actually playing as the core four, Carl, Jim, Eric, and yourself, at the same time as were sort of working on the stuff with George? Because you actually did some gigs in England around that time before you actually had a name. I've heard one really rough tape that was done at one of those club shows, and it's insane. You're playing really fast, really intently. It didn't settle down to the kind of band that you actually became on Layla and that's on those Fillmore shows.
Yeah, well, we're real excited about doing what we're doing. When we knew that we were going to put the band together, Eric and I decided that, okay, we can take this and it spawned from what we're going to do as the core thing.
It was almost closer to what he would have wanted in Blind Faith, but with Southern guys,
yeah,
American guys.
But we were all focused, you know, and the bands that he was in before weren't. They were all like individual superstars standing there playing their thing, you know, and they weren't really dialed into each other. Jim and Carl and I had been playing already for a couple of years together. You know, we were really dialed in.
You were a ready-made rhythm section.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, I mean, these guys had all the expertise, the knowledge, and here I came in, you know, I'm straight out of, you know, church and Stax, you know, so I'm all feel.
And that's what he wanted, because the record that really turned him around in the middle of being in Cream was Music from Big Pink. Yeah. So he was looking for that real earth tone American country
up,
soul thing.
Yeah, and that's how we wound up all living at Eric's. He said it was almost better a year. I figured it must have felt like 15, you know. But we all lived there. I lived at Eric's house. Well, I was the first one to go over, and so I was there several months, just me and Eric. And then when they came over, we all camped out at Eric's for the rest of the year.
So he was really trying to create his own Big Pink.
That was it. That was it. That was really it.
And there's actually, in that Eric Clapton documentary, Life in 12 Bars, there's footage of you guys at Eric's house.
I can pull it
sort
up.
Sort of larking around.
I can pull it up in my Porsche and almost clipped a kid.
So I want to kind of get a grasp on the chronology here. So All Things Must Pass comes out at the end of 1970. The record's done. There's not a tour. How do we morph into the band becoming Derek and the Dominoes from the end?
We went back out of Eric's house and we're still playing, and we got some airplane tickets and went to Miami and recorded. I mean, we did a couple of shows before we went to Miami.
There were a couple of English club shows.
Yeah, we did like the Marquee and the Speakeasy and Roundhouse, I think. So we only did two or three in London. We got on a train and did a couple of gigs. Everywhere we played in England was only £1 for the ticket, and it was word of mouth. No advertising was ever done in any of it. And so a lot of the venues we played, nobody knew who we were. And that was all right. And that happened even into the American tour, because Eric didn't want his name involved, you know.
And there was the single that came out on ATCO, which was Tell the Truth and Roll It Over, with actually very different arrangements.
But that was part of the deal. When Eric was on the phone with George, he said, yeah, okay, well, can we record a few things, you know, in the middle of it? And he said, sure. So that's how we wound up doing. Eric and I had already written Tell the Truth, Roll It Over, Why Does Love Gotta Be So Sad, Bell Bottom Blues, Keep On Growing, I Looked Away, and Any Day. We had already written those songs.
So you when know? You went to Miami, you had the repertoire ready.
We were song ready.
Okay.
Yeah, we were song ready. The only one, Keep On Growing, was the only one that I wrote the melody and lyrics to, that because that was a jam. All right.
When and we Layla did itself came later, because Dwayne was very instrumental in creating that lick.
Well, we had already recorded Layla during the thing, and it didn't have a piano on it. And we got back, and Jim talked again and again to about putting that piano part at the end of it. I hated it, and I fought it all the way. And he went and hung out with Eric's manager. The next thing you know, we're flying back to Miami to play only a piano part and then get on the road.
Those were the days of the record business when you could fly to Miami just to put on a piano.
Well, and it's amazing the move from working with Phil Spector for that initial single to going to working with Tom Dowd and crafting Layla. And we'll talk about that, but we should listen to something from one of the greatest albums in rock history, following one of
and
the greatest albums.
And it wasn't a hit when it came out.
The album or the song?
Nobody wanted to know about Layla.
And actually, I remember Eric telling me that, you know, the idea that they went to Atlantic with a double album, you know, Amon and Jerry Wexler were like, this may not be a good idea.
No.
And the record didn't do anything. That record really took about a year and a half that single took off.
The band broke up. Eric was strung out on heroin, and Dwayne was dead before anybody even listened to Layla.
Well, song, better late than never.
Well, the song we're about to hear is an Eric Clapton, Bobby Whitlock co-write, as is Tell the Truth, as is Why Does Love Got to Be So Sad, and as is Bell Bottom Blues, which has now been officially recognized as an Eric Clapton, Bobby Whitlock co-write. But we've chosen Any Day. So set this one up for us, please.
That song is not about anybody in particular, and we wrote it one afternoon when we was just on a roll, you know, just a made up somebody, you know, made up loves. Both of us, we had unrequited love on our mind, but we didn't have anybody that was hanging on our hand, you know.
Please leave me Oh,
KUTX 98.9 from the album Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs. Derek and the Dominoes with Any Day, a song co-written by our guest Bobby Whitlock, along with many of the songs on the album. Bobby's our guest for our South by Southwest wrap-up show. This is Jody here with David Frick, and it's Bobby's birthday,
too. It is Bobby's birthday.
70 years old, and still rocking.
70 years young.
70 years young. You will catch him, I believe, later this month at the Saxon Pub.
Yeah, yeah.
And
just Coco and me.
Just Bobby Whitlock and Coco Carmel, and it's one of the great Austin music experiences. That song, like so many of the songs on the Layla record, for me, is moved forward by the vocal interplay between Eric and you, Bobby. And it just seems so raw and real and natural and unrehearsed. Was it pretty much like that, just going for it?
Yeah, well, he never ever told me anything to play or what to sing, and ever. And it came real natural because I treated our vocal thing, I had free rein. And so I treated it just like Sam and Dave. You know, it's call and response, that kind of thing. You'd sing one, I'll sing one, we sing together.
And that's what Delaney and Bonnie did, too.
And that's exactly what Delaney and Bonnie did. Kind of, but it was mostly Delaney
but
singing.
But it's that call and response that you get from the church.
Absolutely.
And the songs that you co-wrote, was it the kind of deal where you're sitting down with your instruments knee to knee, writing songs, or did one have most of the song and then the other person filled it in? Like, for instance, Bell Bottom Blues.
No, we had just come back from France. We were going to play this festival in France, and some revolutionaries burned the stage and the equipment and everything, thinking it was our equipment. It wasn't. It belonged to them. But so we got to hang out at Emile's French country mansion or French farm, and that's where we got the Layla cover and all that, you know. But when we came back, I was sitting in the TV room at Hurtwood, and it was just me and Eric there. And he came up to me and with his guitar, and he said, "Hey, Bobby, what do you think about this?" I got up and walked, just standing in the doorway. And he went, dun, 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 and started to sing the song to me, Bell Bottom Blues. And I got to the end of the second verse, and then, you know, you won't find a better loser. I mean, I came in with a line, and he went, "Oh, man, I knew." And so we went in and did the chorus and finished the third verse, went down. I got the last line on the third verse. It just happened like that. He started it without my knowledge, you know. He wrote Layla. He put that together when nobody was around. But when we were writing, the first thing we ever did write, and it just happened to be the first song on the Layla record, was I Looked Away. You know, and he played me the all these changes when we decided to write our own songs rather than keep doing old songs. And, you know, every time we'd write a new song, like Sunshine would go out the door, you know, Sunshine of Your Love, you know, or White Room would go out and that kind of. So we just said, let's just write our own songs, you know, so we don't have to play everybody else's. But it's like, Any Day, we said, what are we going to do? We had been messing with open tunings. And one day and night and next day, we had went through every guitar in Eric's house and broken about every string on all the guitars except for one. And we had been tuning different things. We got to a D-modal tuning, and he just came up with these changes. And we just put this imaginary love thing together right there. And then when we started on that afternoon, we had been up all that night, and we had written Any Day. We started that next thing, and it was open E. Dwayne showed me an open E, and I came up with this really cool stuff. And Eric said, "Oh man, go on, I gotta go to bed, man." So you're wearing me out. He went upstairs and went to bed, and I wrote Tell the Truth, all except for the last verse. And when he came down the next morning for breakfast, you know, Mrs. Egg had it all prepared for us, Mrs. Eggby, and I said, "Hey, man." I mean, because I'd been up all night writing Tell the Truth, you know, sun coming up, you know, new dawn's breaking. I can see it. I could feel the earth moving, you know. And I said, "I wrote this great rock and roll song, man. I tell you, it's just great." He said, "I know. I got my part through the floor. Thank you." He'd been up all night. I've been singing at the top of my lungs. His bedroom was above the living room.
Well, the thing that's interesting about Layla as an album is it's very much an album of songs. You know, you have Dwayne in there as an extra guitar voice, which actually is an interesting mirror of the blend of your voice with Eric's, having Dwayne's guitar with Eric's guitar,
it really worked.
Almost like you've got a mirror image of the of that kind of dialogue and exchange. But when you get to the Fillmore album, that's when you shine as players, because where Eric goes long on the solos. You get a lot of room, and you can hear those songs really grow in improvisation. And that's also when you really crack out the blues covers. And he also does a little wing in a much more almost church-like way, the way Hendrix might have played it if he had had that kind of a band.
Well, you had to have a Southern Baptist preacher's son in your band to get any kind of gospel flavor, you know. And ours was really flavored, you know, because I grew up on gospel music and black gospel music, you know, real soul music. That's where all R&B comes from. Eric told me one time, he said, I'd give anything to have had your background. I said, no, man, you wouldn't want to work the fields. I was picking and chopping cotton, you know, when I was 8 years old. And most I could ever pick was 90 pounds. That was exactly how much I weighed. And 90 pounds pulling down a half mile row for a nine-year-old boy, that's a lot of cotton, you know. But no, I said, I could ride a blues song in the back of a limo. No problem, I swear.
So the Layla album is the only studio album from Derek and the Dominoes, and the reissues add some wonderful treats to it. And then that was followed by the Live at the Fillmore record, which, David, you were just talking about. Bobby, Live at the Fillmore is your favorite document of the band?
Yeah, that was my favorite, because we didn't even know, or I'm sure Eric did, but I didn't even know that it had been recorded. You know, I was pulling up at his house in the back of a limo, and I opened up Rolling Stone magazine, and it said Derek and the Dominoes, ships gold. Live at the Fillmore, ships gold. I went, whoa.
Where's
that
my
That must
gold?
Have been what that extra mic that was taped to my mic was about. You know, because those days, you know, they had a mic for the house and a mic for the truck. You know, for the recording. And I went, that's what that was all about. I couldn't figure it. I didn't think about it at the time, you know, because I'd seen it happen with Delaney and Bonnie, just never give it a thought. And yeah, had I known we were being recorded, I'd have probably, you know, like got a little nervous or something.
Well, and then Derek and the Dominoes implodes for various reasons, and you put out these two amazing records. One just called Bobby Whitlock in March of 72, and then Raw Velvet, which I think was later that year even.
Mm, yeah.
And those were reissued a couple years ago in a package called Where There's a Will, There's a Way. What was it like for you leaving Derek and the Dominoes, and what did ultimately become a big success, to make these two wonderful solo records right out of the box?
Well, when the band, the Dominoes, imploded, we still had the session, Studio B at Olympics still was booked. And I said, I didn't even think twice about what I was going to do next. I just said, well, I'll just go record a record. I'll make a record. And so I myself, and I had signed a deal with Atlantic. I didn't even bother to tell them when I had booked a session and got George and everybody to play. I cut the record before they even knew that I had done it. And when I presented it to them, they turned it down. They just wanted me to go to New York and use session guys, and Tom and Jerry wanted to produce me. And Jerry Wexler got very offended that I turned both he and Tom down as my producers. They didn't want to use my songs. And no, heck no. So first thing I did when I said, I'm going to do my own record. I called Eric. I said, I'm going to cut my own record. You want to play on it? And he said, sure. And so I called George and I said, hey, I'm got studio booked. Would you like to play on my record? Eric's going to. And he said, sure. And Jim Gordon played drums, but he didn't come out of the booth because he and Eric had a beef. So he stayed in the drum booth, and Klaus played bass.
And on the song we're going to hear, Hello LA, Bye Bye Birmingham, Eric is actually
playing bass and slide. That's his only, Eric's playing bass and slide. That actually is Jim Gordon, Eric's on bass, and me.
Oh,
Right after our guest Bobby Whitlock left Derek and the Dominoes, he made two amazing solo records that are compiled on a reissue called Where There's a Will, There's a Way. They both came out in 1972, and that's from the second, Raw Velvet, a song called Hello LA, Bye Bye Birmingham. Bobby Whitlock is with us on his 70th birthday with journalist and radio host David Frick and myself, Jody Denberg. And someone was saying that Chris Robinson was opening shows with that song.
Yes, he does. He plays a lot of interesting covers, and that's actually one of the songs that's been in his shows pretty regularly, and I think it might be on one of the live albums that he's put out as well.
Chris has good taste.
He does, man.
And Bobby, these two solo records, what a gift that they were reissued in this package. I recommend them to everyone. And Clapton on bass on that?
Yeah, he played bass. Carl wasn't in town, but there was a bass there, and Eric just said, I'll take it, no problem. So it's Jim Gordon and Eric set Brownie up for me. So I'm playing rhythm guitar. Jim Carl's wasn't there. Eric's on bass, and then he jumped back over and put Slide on top of it.
For those of you who only know Bobby as a legendary keyboardist, his guitar work is amazing. And in fact, Bobby and his partner Coco and the band played in Studio 1A a few years ago, and you can find that video on YouTube. And just some amazing electric guitar work. So many wonderful records made by Bobby in the intervening years, covers by the likes of George Jones, so many great songs written. And then about 11 years ago, someone told me, hey man, Bobby Whitlock moved to Austin. I'm like, how can that be? How did that come about?
Jan Reed, who is an author, lives here, came to Nashville, and Coco and I were hanging our hat in Nashville, going back and forth to Switzerland, playing for the Japanese consortium. We went three times back and forth to Geneva, just Coco and me. And, they're crazy about Coco. My goodness. And, well, isn't everybody?
We're all crazy about Coco.
Anyway, we were living in Nashville trying to figure out what in the world are we doing in Nashville, you know? I said, I don't need somebody to write a song with, but I mean, it was handy for all of that kind of thing. And then Jan called me and interviewed me for a book that he was working on called Layla and Other Sort of Love Songs. And I said, sure. We got in the course of the interview, he came to Nashville. I said, what's going on in Austin? He said, well, I said, they have any kind of music scene, you know, other than Willie and the Boys and all that? He said, yeah, it's got something going on. And then I called a friend of mine who was from Fort Worth that played in my band named David Millsap. And I asked him, he played guitar with Delbert McClinton and stuff. I said, what's going on in Texas now with the music scene? He said, the only place for you would be in Austin. And I said, well, what's happening down there? He said, I don't know. He said, but I got another number I can give you. A buddy of mine, Stephen Bruton. And Stephen was from Fort Worth as well. Well, I called Stephen, and he was in L.A., in the middle of a session when he heard Bobby Whitlock was on the phone. He just stopped what he was doing. And I was telling him, I was thinking that he was at home here in Austin. I said, well, we want to kind of come down and check it out. Well, he said, well, there's only one place that you should be playing. There's only one place to play. And he said, the Saxon. So we called the Saxon and drove up for one night. Went from Nashville to here one night. The guy who owns it, Joe Edwards, came out and looked out the door, and as I was getting out of the car, and he said, you are him. And I didn't know what he meant. and then he said, would you guys like a residency? Before we even walked in the building, I didn't even know what that meant, because we were looking for a house. And
you said, are you looking for a residence?
Yeah. But anyway, we said yes, and we decided to move back here. And we've been here for going on 13 years come November the 1st on the same farm, exactly 11 miles from the Saxon door. Our front door is there and right on the edge of town. And so been there the whole time.
And you and Coco have made some incredible records, including Esoteric, Metamorphosis. There's been some reissues of your records like My Time and a compilation called Vintage. And when you got here, it wasn't too long afterwards that you made a record called Lovers.
Yeah, yeah. And when we did it, we were invited, Stephen Bruton invited us to be a part of this big thing called A Road to Austin. And had an 11-piece band. And Brandon Temple, Yogi on bass. I mean, then Stephen David Grissom, Eric Johnson on guitar, the big horn section. Stephen Barber on keyboards as well. Big band, 11-piece band. And so we said, yeah, we'd love to do this. And not knowing that it was going to be 23,000 people there, but we went for the rehearsals, and we did Why Does Love Gotta Be So Sad? And our version of Layla, which is a laid back and up tempo, like, because it came from the seven licks came from an Albert King song that he didn't write, but he recorded. It's called As the Years Go Passing By,
which is, and when you hear that lick,
as soon as I heard that lick,
it was just like, it was amazing that I hadn't thought of that before. It's such a beautiful use of that lick.
Yeah, and Dwayne brought that to the table during the session, and Eric speeded it up. So that's how that came about. But I thought one day we were in Nashville, and Coco said, you never do Layla. Why don't we ever play Layla? I said, that's Eric's song. And I said, the original version came from a real laid-back blues thing, you know, a laid-back blues thing. And and then we did it with the Dominoes. And I said, and then he went over there and did the acoustic version. I said, it's a testament to a great song. You can do it upside down, backward, and in Chinese, and it will still be a great song, you know. And it just dawned on me, wow, laid back, up tempo. Why can't I do the both? So the best of both worlds. And so it just happened right then, you know. What do you do when you get lonely? You know, I just went, that's it. And I'm surprised that we didn't think of that when we recorded it.
Well, that was our introduction to you in town. It was the album Lovers has that redo of Layla right when you got here. And it's been such a pleasure to have you in town for these last 11 years and to go to the Saxon Pub and to see you and Coco Carmel play. And before we get to that version of Layla, I'm just curious if you guys are going to make a new record, the two of you.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're already making a new record. And we've been making a new record. But I was going to say quickly that when that was the year that we did South by Southwest, we met David. And it was Bobby's 60th birthday. Mm. So that was 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I mean, you got a great memory.
Well,
I had plenty of time to think about it sitting back here.
10 years.
I'm looking forward to this new record that you guys were working on.
Oh,
I'm looking
awesome.
Forward to seeing you at the Saxon Pub later this month. And I'm looking forward to you, Bobby, having a great 70th birthday with Coco.
Oh, thank you very much.
And I wanted to mention some of the players on the new record. We have Daryl Jones from the Rolling Stones playing bass on there. And Charlie Drayton mm-hmm. is on drums, played with the Divinals and
Neil Young.
A whole bunch of people. And Keith, he actually plays with Keith and... And who else is on there?
Got Colin Linden.
Colin Linden.
Oh, he's
what a
awesome.
Great guitar player.
From Bruce Coburn.
Yeah. And there's a piano player that I heard in Memphis, and I have put him on four tracks. His name is Dave Warmerdam. He's an incredible, the incredible
prodigy.
Keyboard prodigy of
where
all.
Where is he from again?
He's from the Netherlands. I met him. They have Talbert Airs in Memphis is a deluxe suite hotel. And they have one of my grand pianos there, and I always stay there every time. But they have the Blues Week there, and he was the winner of all this blues stuff, and he happened to be staying in my room. And I met him there and heard him play, and I just went, wow, one of these days I'm going to put him on something. And sure enough.
Well, when that record's ready, we have a date for you guys to come back and play it for us on
right.
the airwaves.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me today. It's
Happy
been a pleasure.
Happy birthday, my friend.
And thank you. Thank
we'll,
you, everybody.
We'll see you at the Saxon Pub.
And
thank you, Coco Carmel. David Frick's going to stick around. We're going to make some more music. But, David, we need to play that version of Layla.
Yes, we do.
We were talking about from the album Lovers on KUTX, Bobby Whitlock and Coco Carmel.